More than half of all companies globally are family-owned or operated. Family businesses contribute 70% of the world's GDP and account for 65% of jobs. Their voices are important. Their stories must be told.
Brought to you by the award-winning publication, Tharavat Magazine. This is the Family Business Voice with your host, Ramya Elagami.
Love, money, power, and sibling rivalry. A leading expert in the field of family business dynamics, clinical therapist, advisor, and author Dean Fowler has helped hundreds of family firms transcend the emotional barriers that threaten their organization's sustainability. Dean Fowler often mediates sibling conflict in the family business context. Mostly, the disputes he sees involve brothers and sisters contesting the estate plans of recently deceased parents. The cause of this severe dysfunctionality is almost always emotional. Common tropes include jealousy, inequality, and long-held, deep-rooted resentment. Despite the success rate of Fowler's mediation, some still move to litigation. Working with these relationships gives Dean a unique perspective on fraternity, and his experiences have uncovered a better way for families to approach succession. We sat down with Dean to discuss sibling rivalry. Enjoy this episode with Dean Fowler. We wanted to zoom in on a very specific topic that has very negative ramifications for the family business, which is sibling rivalry. And of course, you feature prominently as an expert in that area. And I think my first question truly is like, how come? So how come you took such an interest in this topic? And is it something that you've come across a lot in your professional life?
In the 1980s and early 1990s, in my work with family businesses, I was primarily brought in by estate planning attorneys to mediate sibling conflict to avoid litigation after the parents had died and the estate plan was put in place. So the first 10 years or so of my career, which started in the early 80s, dealt almost always with sibling rivalry, and it was usually based on what I called emotional rivalry, dealing with fairness and their relationships with their mother and father and their conflicts with one another. Many of those cases I was able to mediate successfully, and some of them went to litigation. So that's how I got involved in the first place. But then I decided there must be a better way to do this than to have families have these fancy estate plans, which were perfectly done legally, but led to all kinds of conflict in the family after the parents died and the estate plan was implemented. Of course, there's sibling rivalry in businesses where the parents have been died as well. But the original issues really, the original work to avoid litigation and do mediation really gave me a perspective on it.
Well, I'm really interested in you mentioning, obviously, like here, the parents as well, the role of the parents. I'd like, so we hear of sibling rivalry happening at any given moment in time, whether the parents are still alive or whether they have passed away. Can you tell us a little bit, like I'm personally very curious about this actually as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the differences that you've observed in sibling rivalry before and after the parents pass? Is there a difference, or does it remain the same dynamic?
Well, let me take one step back. In my article, I talk about two types of sibling rivalry, one strategic and one emotional, and I want to focus just now on the emotional one. Mm-hmm. And my point is, I'm also licensed as a clinical psychotherapist, although I've let my license end because I just do family business consulting. But from an emotional standpoint, in my view, sibling rivalry is actually caused by the sibling's relationship with their parents, not with their siblings. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that the siblings want the attention, the blessing, the love of their parents. And if they see more attention, more love, more care going to one sibling rather than another, then you often have sibling rivalry because it's really not about the sibling. It's about gaining the attention and the blessing from the parents. Mm-hmm. Another word we would use is there's a triangle set up. The parents at one corner of the triangle and each of the siblings is at a different corner of the triangle, or it could be more than one sibling. And the issue gets played out among the siblings, but it's really about the sibling's relation with the parent. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the question you ask about before the death of the parents and after, especially in the context of family business, where money and power are at the core of issues and leadership roles and things like that, in during the life of the parents, people often accommodate to the parents to not step out of line. Mm-hmm. So they'll have sibling rivalry, but they'll keep it under wraps because they're fearful that one of them will lose and be kicked out of the family or not get what they want. So a lot of sibling rivalry in a family business during the lifetime of the parents is modified by accommodating to the parents in order to get their blessing. After the death of the parents, there's no lid on the steam pot. The parents have died and people can do what they want to. Mm-hmm. Without retribution from the parents. And so that sibling rivalry continues to play out in terms, usually in the bad cases, of high conflict of who's going to get the money, who's going to get the power, who's going to get to control the business, whose voice is going to be heard. That those two are different. Because this sense of accommodation, I think, is particularly critical in entrepreneurial businesses, first generation.
It's so interesting how parenting plays such a huge role in the whole mortality discussion of family businesses, right? Like we also often, the whole discussion of blaming a third generation for running the company into the ground is often like a lot of people say, well, you know, you should look to the second generation and how they've raised them in the first place, right? Like the two these things. And same here, of course, sibling rivalry to a large extent can be brought back to how we are raised and how we are taught to interact with our siblings. And do parents accept responsibility for this usually when they see this happen, or is there sort of more of a denial or both? And also, just out of curiosity, and I think a lot of readers would love to know this, like, what do you think are early telltale signs that you're creating that kind of an atmosphere between your children? And in particular, like, you know, when you have a business that you know you will eventually want to hand over to them?
Well, I'd like to go back one step again. Because in my view, at the core of sibling rivalry is the issue of individual self-esteem. The siblings who have developed a strong sense of self-esteem can respect each other. They don't need to always get the rewards or blessings or attention from their parents, or for that matter, from anyone else, because they're comfortable with themselves. The bigger issue in sibling rivalry is at the roots of a lack of strong self-esteem. That's rooted in the parents, and particularly, I believe, in entrepreneurial companies. And then I'll talk about second generation that you brought up. Because number one, the parents, or at least the entrepreneurial parent, isn't at home. Mm-hmm. They're not there to praise the children. They're not there to applaud them at their soccer game or take an interest in their hobbies or even know what their interests are in or who their friends are. Mm-hmm. But even deeper than this, in some cases, entrepreneurs tend to have narcissistic personality disorder. It's one of the things that actually makes them successful as entrepreneurs. But it also means that in order to get the blessing of the entrepreneur, you have to accommodate to and agree with the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And that tends to undermine self-esteem. Because if you really want to be who you are, you're going to be rejected. You have to accommodate and be who you're expected to be. That leads to a lot of the sibling rivalry issues.
You mentioned before the distinction that you make between emotional rivalry and strategic rivalry. I'd love to get back to that because I think it's very important and a very comforting clarification that you give as well here between those two types of rivalry. Can you tell us a little bit more about it, please?
Okay, yes. The second type I've called strategic rivalry. And let's say you actually have healthy individuals of the same family who all have good self-esteem. There's lots of families like that. And as I said, in my early career, I mostly dealt with litigation, trying to avoid litigation. The last 25 years of my life, I decided to work with families that actually were committed to developing and supporting their children and having smooth, successful transition. Mm-hmm. It happened to be that the families that tended to work that way tend to be third, fourth, or fifth generation family businesses, okay, where they've learned through their historical process. So to get to strategic rivalry, I'm assuming first, just to make it clean, that we don't have emotional sibling rivalry between people because everybody has strong self-identity, strong self-esteem. They know who they are. They can communicate effectively or open with one another. But from a strategic business standpoint, they could have very different ideas about risk, for example. You can have two very capable siblings, one of whom is a high risk taker and one of whom isn't. One of whom likes to be the accounting type that counts the numbers, and the other one is who develops new products that nobody's ever thought of. Those aren't necessarily bad differences between the siblings, but they, if the siblings are business partners, which they usually are because of the estate plan where they're 50-50 partners or they're each 25% partners and no one has voting control, then they need to be able to come to agreement with one another on opportunities facing the business to make good strategic decisions. For example, should we expand globally or should we stay local? Because our original entrepreneurial business was a local company that maybe made it to $35 to $65 million in annual sales. Whereas by the time the next generation takes up, there's an opportunity to compete on the basis of that earlier business and say, you know, if we're really going to grow, because now we have to support four siblings who own the company together rather than two parents with their children, it's a long time standing issue that we saw in family farms since the Middle Ages. Yeah. How do you feed more and more families off the same amount of land?
Yeah.
So what happens in strategic rivalry is different positions on the strategic actions for the business to take, usually in terms of growth and risk. Okay. Will we expand globally? Do we want to introduce new products? How much should we keep as capital reserves? How much should we pay in dividends or in compensation? Those can all be important business distinctions that even non-siblings have those debates in executive management teams. And I think sometimes that those strategic differences between siblings can make people think because they're siblings, it's just emotional sibling rivalry, when in fact isn't. I was working with a family just last week, and they had put in a decision to put the next generation on the board of directors along with the parents. So they had two from each branch, a senior generation and a successor, and they had a rule that in order to pass the board decision, they had to have unanimous consent. The problem with that governance structure was if they have to get unanimous consent to make every single business decision, they're going to miss a lot of opportunities that their competitors don't have to deal with. For example, oh, there's a new technology, like a new type of printing machine. And we've been doing lithography historically, and now we have digital presses. Are we going to invest the money in that or not? If they have to make unanimous decisions on key strategic decisions, that will become very difficult without a, an agreement about how decisions will be made, whether you need a board of directors. And that's more of a governance issue, whereas the emotional rivalry is more of a psychological issue. And I think we need to make the distinction because too often people try to solve it with psychological issues like, let's just communicate better and make up and be friends, when the real solution would be to put in a stronger governance system, an advisory board, rules about who's in charge, sharing the CEO role, whatever it is.
I've never heard anyone make this distinction before, and I keep on nodding because I'm from a second generation family business and I work with both my sisters. So I it's really interesting to make that distinction. If you think back to any argument you've had with your siblings in the business, like, you know, it's very true. We tend to feel like everything is emotionally related, whereas I believe that like a lot of it is actually can be strategic. And you're absolutely right in pointing out that difference and the very important difference to make, in my opinion. But also from my own experience, but also from many of the people that we interview, though, we also know that it is so interesting how siblings working together, and this is not necessarily only just by a business being handed down. There's also many businesses founding generations that have siblings joining forces. It can be such a powerful thing. It's an incredibly powerful force when siblings do align and when they do, like, you know, manage to build that business. what do you attribute that to? Like, you know, is it all a matter of trust, or like, what in your experience, what have you seen that has made those dynamics so incredibly positive, as negative as they can become, basically?
You ask, you know, they can either be adversaries or they can be really good business partners. And when I talk about really strong family business partnerships, and I had a group of four siblings I worked with who were all amazing, all talented in different strengths. And one goes back to the family, which is they have already have a history of trust and confidence in one another. That's hard to build if you're dealing with partners who don't have relationships with one another previously. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got a person I'm working with who's formed a partnership with a best friend from high school, mm-hmm. you know, after they're in their 40s now. Well, that's similar in that they've already established that sense of honesty and trustworthiness and yeah. integrity. But in a family, you know your siblings inside out. Mm-hmm. Sometimes can become a difficulty because you'll take a problem that they had when they were 14 and assume they still have that problem. Like,
yeah.
I have one client where the one son was extremely bright and talented, but because he was so bright and talented, he didn't really have to work in school. So he kind of just made his way through and just got C's and B's just to make it. So now they all assume as he's older that he's always going to take the easy route.
Okay.
As an adult, that he has not done that. So sometimes, even though you have that history of honesty, integrity, confidence, you can also have some of that early sibling expectations that are no longer true when you're now adults.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that maybe people don't talk about successful partnerships from a business standpoint, it's the cost of capital is less,
right,
compared to your competitors. So, for example, if you can stay together as partners and not have to buy people out,
yeah,
and all provide your capital resources, you don't have to go into bank debt. You don't have to maybe get venture capital. And that can really make a difference in the early stages of a business.
The thing that fascinates me a lot about watching sibling relationships, I'm not sure if failing is actually the right word. I was just trying to think whether there's a better word, like when you see it break, sort of like when you see it like fall apart, or like when you see communication break down, which is obviously the first thing that breaks down, and is that there's very often still a lot of love there, actually, right? Like, so there's, it's not like it goes from loving each other to perfect indifference, or even from competing with each other to perfect indifference. I'm afraid there's a lot of like pain involved at the stage where actually like a conflict escalates as well. So of course, what we'd love to know from you is whether you think that there are actual ways to prevent us going from, you know, the usual amount of conflict, I would say, to outright rivalry, like whether you
right.
think there's a way to mitigate that. So maybe we are competitive as siblings, but we can avoid becoming rival.
Correct. And going back to my distinction, the stronger everybody's individual self-esteem is, so that they can listen and not always have to defend themselves,
mm-hmm.
The easier it is to appreciate the other person's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
The more that you're feeling attacked and have to defend yourself, the more you will escalate conflict. So one thing that's really critical is learning open communication skills and learning how to listen for understanding rather than listening to be understood.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the first step I always take is improved communication skills.
Mm-hmm.
And that means, and I have a real difference with a lot of family business consultants, because we're dealing with families of adults, you know, 40 and 50 year olds, not parents with their little children. And I think in order to have effective adult communication, you have to do a lot of one-on-one work and really get to know each individual
mm-hmm.
inside out. So rather than facilitating a conflict resolution meeting with a family, I would want to first really get to understand
mm-hmm.
what the real concerns are between the siblings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because maybe those could be addressed, but they're not being articulated. I could give a good example. Four sisters owned a company, 25% each. The husband of one of those sisters was the CEO, and he was extremely successful. I mean, he grew the business, and it was fantastic. He took it like made it 10 times bigger, like from 10 million to 100 million.
Wow.
But here was the issue. The four sisters owned the company equally. The CEO, the husband of one of the sisters, was paid extremely well for his work, but no dividends were paid. So they had the nice swimming pool. They had the Lexus. They sent their kids to private schools. And the other sisters are saying, wait a minute, while we didn't work there and our husbands don't work there, we're co-owners of this business. And as I talked to them, what do they really want? They didn't really want a lot. They just want to be recognized as not being the girls. And these were 50-year-old women. And they wanted to be recognized as owners, which meant they should get some kind of dividend flow or S distribution from a $100 million company so that they could take care of their children. Or one of them, if their husband was out of work, they could still manage their household. It didn't require that they sell the business or drain the business of wealth. They just wanted some acknowledgement. It also meant, actually, from a governance standpoint, changing the board of directors, because all the accountants, the lawyers, and the board all thought they were working for the brother-in-law, mm-hmm. when in fact they were working for the four sisters. Mm-hmm. And nobody had ever pointed that out to the advisors. So once that deeper issue about fairness was addressed, the love, care, and concern in the family was intact. But nobody was talking about that as the issue. They were just saying, you make too much money. So I think communication is really important to calm down, and that requires real knowledge of active listening skills, mm-hmm. and listening for understanding rather than just to be understood. I think you usually can find with normal, healthy people good solutions in those kind of cases. Usually the problem is people do want to care for their siblings if they only knew what the real issues were. And you can't get to that till you have really effective communication. That's why I think every family should have a formal family council meeting, mm-hmm. where you can discuss family issues in depth. My other pet peeve about that, since I was trained as a clinical psychotherapist, is you can't just have accountants and lawyers run those meetings, because mm-hmm. they're not trained in how to deal with family communication. And they often get pulled into the family and become part of the problem. So hire a good, trained, skilled person that knows both business and has the background in psychological training.
Fortunately, that body of experts is growing. So we're lucky now to have much more access to these things than we did back in the day. So I think for me, like, the only thing that is left for me to ask you, you know, we have the family business discussion has changed a lot, right? Like in the time that you've been active, like, and so you started out at the time where it was barely considered a field. You must have had very little recourse to even like the academic field was very young at that stage or almost non-existent. Whereas today we see a lot of discussion around family business and their dynamics, etc. We are talking about families that usually deal with history. So that's why it's very important that all of this tacit knowledge as well that you've built up over the years isn't lost to future generations. So that's why my question is, well, like, you know, where would you personally like to see this kind of conversation go? Like, you know, where do you feel like now, like, you know, when you look at siblings rivalry in particular, what would you like the field to recognize more or talk about more so that, you know, we can further be of service to family businesses?
Actually, I wrote an article on that subject, which I could send you, but it's not on my website right now.
Okay.
It was published in the Family Practitioner, and it was called Interdisciplinary Fluency. Mm. And this is the area that I think we need to do a lot more work on. Mm-hmm. And by interdisciplinary fluency, I don't mean that you have to have a law degree and an accounting degree and a PhD in psychology in order to serve the market. Mm-hmm. But I do think all the different disciplines need to be much more knowledgeable and be fluent in the issues that face all the other disciplines. Mm-hmm. One of the ways I did that early in my career, I created a study group of advisors, and we met every month for 10 years.
Wow.
And it wasn't for marketing and networking. It was to do case studies. Mm-hmm. of the cases we were actually facing. And each month, a different type of advisor. I had a headhunter, partner in a CPA, a corporate attorney, estate planning attorney, myself, mm-hmm. who had the background in clinical psychology, headhunter, insurance people, trust officers, you know, anybody that could serve the market. And we met monthly. One advantage of working in Milwaukee is I got to know a lot of people. And there's a lot of family businesses in Wisconsin. And what I learned from that is to gain the respect of each other, you really need to learn to talk and have knowledge in the other person's field. Mm-hmm. And I think right now, too many people are good in their own discipline and they're trying to help family business, but they're not very good in collaborating with other types of advisors. Mm-hmm. And that requires that they really gain interdisciplinary fluency. Mm-hmm. And not many do that. More firms are beginning to have partners that serve family businesses where they'll put together a team of like a psychologist, a lawyer,
yeah,
and an accountant or something. But even in those firms that I've seen, they don't necessarily collaborate with one another.
Yeah.
Even estate planning attorneys and corporate attorneys in the same firm don't collaborate with each other.
Yeah.
So I think those people who really want to be excellent family business consultants, so I guess where I see the field go is much more interdisciplinary learning and discussion. Again, listening for understanding, not to be understood. So during this 10 years where I had this group that we met, the purpose was to ask questions of the other discipline of why would you structure your estate plan that way for your client? Or I might say, by structuring the estate plan that way, for example, tying things up in generation skipping trusts where the next generation has no voice, is actually going to undermine,
of course,
the family opportunities. So let's work together. That requires being respected by the other disciplines, and that only comes by a lot of education and hard work. So I think that a clinical psychologist or a clinically trained psychotherapist who's got a state license,
yeah,
and gone through the process really should be part of the team.
Mm.
And they're often not. I'm concerned that there's a lot of really good coaches, but they don't really have the expertise in the really tough issues. But from the clinical side, I think clinicians that want to work in family business have to understand business. They have to understand the law. They have to understand accounting.
Yeah.
And they aren't taking the time to learn those things.
Mm.
Lawyers are actually happy to see me on their team.
Yeah, of course.
Because they're confident that I'll be able to do with the family stuff. And I actually will give them an outline of what the documents should look like and what their topic should be.
Mm.
And then they write the documents, and then I read the documents to make sure that the estate planning technical documents actually are consistent with the goals of the family.
Yeah.
Then when the estate plan goes through, we don't have to deal with litigation among siblings who have rivalry.
Honestly, Dean, I love everything that you said today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Family Business Voice. Subscribe to our channels now on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, or Spotify to be notified of our weekly episodes.